Welcome to Speak in Flow, the podcast that helps leaders like you unlock the power of your voice, achieve maximum potential and flow through exceptional communication. I'm your host, Melinda Lee, and I am passionate about helping company leaders and their teams master public speaking, pitching with impact, and stepping into their full leadership potential. Thanks for tuning in to the Speak in Flow podcast, which is the top 10% of podcasts worldwide. When you stick around until the end, I have an exclusive gift just for listeners only, something that will immediately help you and your team up-level your communication. Let's dive in. Welcome, dear listeners, to the Speak in Flow podcast, where we dive into unique strategies and techniques to help you and your team achieve maximum potential and flow, even when the stakes are high. I have an amazing industry leader in strategic management, strategic communications, crisis management, and training. She is the principal founder of Wickstead and Company. Her name is Eileen. Welcome, Eileen.
Melinda, thank you so much. I'm so delighted to be with you and your listeners. And I'm excited to talk about communication and really how to elevate, become more effective, and gain greater clarity given the very crowded, noisy environment we all operate in today.
Yeah, I agree. And with over three decades of experience, you have so much wisdom to share, and I can't wait to dive in. So before we get into the meat and the meat and the potatoes, what are you passionate about lately? Like, what are you doing within your company and your firm that you feel so passionate about?
What I'm really passionate about is working with our clients who recognize today more than ever that we are living in and operating in this attention-based economy. Every day, leaders and others are really fighting for mind share. How can I get people's attention? And so what's interesting about that is if you're a leader, or let's say you are working with a client, if you can't get their attention, there's no way that you're going to be able to get them to listen, right? Or feel a certain way or do something. And so what I'm excited about is to really unlock that or decode that for people. And it really comes down to really recognizing the importance of being relevant. How can I be relevant so that what I'm saying is so important, speaks so deeply that people not only want to listen, but they want to lean in? And it really comes into becoming audience-centric. And I think from a leadership standpoint, in fact, we just had a quarterly team meeting yesterday, and it's interesting, you know, there's so many things I want to share with our team as we look at results and we look at the current environment and we talk about the challenges and what we're going to need, what we will need to be doing as we head into the end of the third and finish strong in the fourth quarter. But I always go back to, what do they need to hear? Mm-hmm. And quite candidly, I didn't learn that until, I think, far too late in my career, right? I've been doing this for about three decades. I wish I had learned this, you know, three decades ago. I really learned it much more two decades ago, that if I don't think about what's relevant to the audience and build that connection and common ground about what's important to them first, they're not going to listen. They're not going to lean in. And if they're not going to listen, there's no way that you can, you know, increase their awareness or understanding of an issue. There's no way that they're going to be able to feel anything, let alone do anything. And so it's really about meeting people where they are and really thinking about what's relevant to them. And I'm really passionate about that, because you can sit in lots of different meetings and you can just feel when someone is missing it. Mm-hmm. And really stopping those big misses is something that I'm really passionate about.
Thank you for sharing that. And do you recall the moment when you realized back then, like, oh my gosh, this is something so important? Was there a story behind it and some example?
So it was really interesting. We do a tremendous amount of work. We're a strategic communications, crisis management, and training firm, and we've got about five key sectors that we work in. And one of the sectors that we work in heavily is in healthcare. And back in the day, this was in the 90s, right? Mid, late 90s, where there was a lot of consolidation in healthcare. And so there might be in a mid-market, there may be seven independent hospitals. And then in the 90s, there was a lot of consolidation as health systems began coming together. And what was interesting is those clients always wanted to talk about this merger is going to be great. This merger's better because now we're going to be stronger. And now we're going to be able to provide even better healthcare. And we're going to be able to improve our quality and enhance our safety and do more things. And it was fascinating to me because I was working with our client, but they said that they had their presentation taken care of, that they had taken care of their presentation. They didn't need our help, but they invited me to be in the meeting because following this meeting, we were going to be working with them on all the communication moving forward. So I'm sitting in the back of the room, and you need to just to set the stage. We have probably about 300 people because they're going to be doing these same meetings, around the clock because healthcare is around the clock, right? So this is the early meeting. This is for the people who just got off at 7 o'clock in the morning. So people have been asked to stay. So you've got people in their scrubs, you've got stethoscopes, you've got people who have just spent the last 12 or 8 hours taking care of patients. They know that there's going to be a big announcement about either their hospital's being merged or it's being sold or something like that. And so they come in and I'm sitting in the back of the room and I can feel the nervousness and sort of the anxiety and the worry. You can see it on these caregivers' faces, right? Whether it's nursing or whether it's, anesthesia, or it could have been accounts payable or whatever it is. They were mixed groups of people, not just clinical. And the CEO gets up and says, "I have some really exciting news to share with all of you. We are going to be merging with," and I'll just use the name St. Mary's. It wasn't St. Mary's. "We're going to be merging with St. Mary's. And because of this, we are now finally going to be able to provide good healthcare to our community. We're going to be able to provide quality healthcare to our community." And I looked around sitting in the back of the room, and I could see the anxiety and nervousness turned very quickly to anger and resentment and fear and frustration because that CEO, he had just insulted all of them. What his intent was, "Hey, this is exciting. We're going to be merging with a bigger player. We're going to have access to more patients and maybe a robot and a few other things that we don't have." But the impact of what people heard was, "We don't give good care now. We have bad quality. We're unsafe," right? And so it turned very quickly into frustration and anger. And really, people were coming in, and really, the only thing they cared about at that time was, "Do I have a job?" Because when you go into a merger, when the music stops, right, do I have a chair? And the reality is, not always. We don't need two business offices. We don't need two CNOs or CEOs or, CIOs or whatever it may end up being. And so it was a big miss. And what happened after that meeting, because the CEO he became angry. So the meeting ended. He ended up being asked a lot of questions, and people were becoming much more hostile. And when the meeting was over, we debriefed because you have to remember he was going to do another meeting like at 10 o'clock that same morning. So it was a series of these meetings. And he said to me, he goes, I don't understand. These people don't get it. And I remember saying to him, because this is the Brooklyn, New York directness coming out in me, having born in being born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, I'm pretty direct. And I said, well, with all due respect, sir, you don't get them. And he looked at me. And you know, that's a calculated risk because he could say, you're out. And he said, tell me more. And I said, I understand the intent of what you were saying. You're going to have so many more resources. You're going to have access to lots of different patients. This other hospital also has clinics in different counties, right? This is going to open the door for opportunity. They don't care about opportunity. They want to know, are they on the team? The only thing they care about is, do I have a job? Is it going to be the same job? If I do have a job, am I going to get paid the same? Are my benefits the same? Do I have PTO? Right? That's what they care about. Because right now, this change is threatening their safety and their security. We have to address that first. And even if we don't have that answer, we have to let them know the process we're going to go through in making that decision. I said, we have to meet them where they are. What you're excited about is the opportunity. And so the sequencing of the communication is wrong. And therefore, you've angered, frustrated, and insulted people. And that was a really important moment for me because what I realized was there are a lot of these hospital CEOs who are also site presidents of our nuclear clients, who are also, in charge of banks and other things that are going into these meetings saying, okay, here are the four things I want to tell you. Here's what you need to know. I need to educate you on this. And in doing so, you're frustrating and insulting people. Back in the 60s, which by the way, I wasn't in business back in the 60s, right? Okay. I was barely born. So I just want to clarify that. But back in the 60s, you see these shows back in the 60s, it was command and control, right? From a leadership standpoint. You're going to sit there and I'm going to tell you, and don't even ask a question. 90s, 2000s, 2010, right? It's far different than that. It's far different than that. And so that was sort of a watershed moment for me, Melinda, if you think about it. It was a watershed moment because what I realized was if you don't think about your audience first, everything else has the potential to go into the ditch. And then everything else doesn't matter, right? Everything else doesn't matter.
Oh my gosh, what a powerful story. And it's so true. When we just overlook and tell them what we want to share, listen to me, this is what I have to say, then we may have missed a mark on what do they need to hear? What are the top things they need to hear? Where are they at? So are you saying when we think about the audience, what are some things that we could do to really be more audience-centric?
So when we think about being audience centric, I always think about the audience that's going to be in front of me. They're asking three questions. So what? Who cares what's in it for me? Right? So what? Why am I in this meeting? So what? Who cares? Like, why should I even care about this? And what's in it for me? How does it relate? And so in a lot of the work that we do, people talk about, well, we're going to do our strategic plan for 2025, 2026. And if I'm sitting, if I'm in a cubicle and I'm sitting in the back row, like, how does that impact me? So we have to be really deliberate about what that means. That may mean that if you're client facing, we want you to increase your client facing behavior. We want you to improve it. We want you to do this. We want you to do that, right? So I think from becoming audience centric, it puts the onus on you to begin thinking about what does that mean. And so before I go into any kind of meeting, and I did this for our team meeting, is and this is what I do with our clients, I go through this audience analysis. And the first thing is, if there are 10, if there's 3, 9, 12, 27, 250, doesn't matter how many people are in the room, I want you to divide them by thirds, right? Okay, divide them by thirds. Okay, so one group could be veteran employees, or other employees could be clinical employees. The other could be non-clinical employees, and the other ones could be retirees or whatever, whoever's going to be in the room. Divide them by thirds. The next category is what's on their mind. What's on their mind? They're coming into the meeting. They've gotten a calendar invite. It says Strategic Plan 2025. So as they're coming into the meeting, what's on their mind? What do they care about? What's important for them? So when we work with our energy clients and we're talking about Strategic Plan 2025 or 2026, if I'm in the engineering department, my issue could be budget. Am I going to be able to get the money to be able to do the upgrades that I know that I need because we need to improve our system reliability? Okay. Last year they didn't get the money. The year before they didn't get the money. They likely aren't going to get the money they need this year. So how are they feeling? That's the third category. They could be feeling frustrated, angry, disappointed. Or why are we even talking about strategic plans? Because you know what? We're not very strategic. Everything's a fire drill, right? We didn't deliver on our strategic plan the year before. So everything's a fire drill. So somebody may be coming in and it's like, why are we doing this again? And you know what? I have high distrust. So we think about the audience, we think about what is the issue that's important, and we think about how they feel. If that hospital CEO had done that, he would have noticed that he would have broken it down to clinical, non-clinical, okay, and people who are really new to the organization, because those are the people who usually get dismissed first if you're going through a merger, right? And the issue that everybody was curious about is, will I have a job? Now, if I'm clinical, it's going to be, if I'm a nurse, I'm probably going to have a job. If I'm a heart surgeon, I'm still going to have a job. So it's going to be, do I have a job and will I be able to do my job the way I currently do it? Right? Right. So their feeling may be interest or nervousness. But if I'm non-clinical, let's say I'm working in the accounting department or the billing department or the dietary department. Okay. We only need one of those departments, right? So for me, it's do I have a job? It's job security. So it's like, am I even going to have anything? And so my emotion is going to be fear. I'm going to be fearful. I'm scared. I'm scared. So the CEO needs to say, I'm walking into a group, I'm walking into a meeting where people are feeling fearful, scared, and uncertain about whether or not they will have a job. And if they do have a job, will they be able to work in the way that they've worked previously? That influences my tone and approach. That influences how I begin, right? And I begin with, I'm very excited to share with you the fact that we're merging with St. Mary's Hospital. St. Mary's, as you all know, is a bigger hospital group than we are. They have a lot of opportunity that we'll be able to grow into. But today I know this news is, while it may not be surprising, this news will probably is evoking some anxiousness or nervousness about whether or not you have a job, or if you do have a job, will you be able to continue to do the job that you currently do? Let me take care of that first. Then you bring the temperature down. You take the air out of the tires, and that's critically important to do. So as we think about that, that is about being audience centric. And it's hard as leaders because you know what? It's like, hey, we're behind on our business development goals, right? Here's what I want to tell people. The number was 40, we're at 20. Do more. Well, you've got to take this moment to be able to build the relevancy, right? and make it relevant to them.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we need it to be 40? Well, we need it to be 40 because we need to build the pipeline. Why is it only at 20? Don't know. Do you not know how to prospect? Do you not know? Have you been too busy with client work? Whatever it may end up being, right? But I'll tell you, depending upon the age group, right, the generational group that you're in, some leaders that I work with are like, hey, I'm not going to waste my time trying to explain to people that that it's 40, the number is 40. They just need to know the number is 40. And then I'll say, well, Charlie, the number has been 40 for the last 2 quarters. It hasn't changed. So what you've been doing, how's it working? I don't think it's been working. So let's figure out about how we change our communication to move the needle, to make people see that number 40. Okay, if we don't get 40 new leads, that's going to impact our pipeline. Okay, if our pipeline is impacted and we don't have anything new in the pipeline, then maybe we may not get bonuses. Oh, maybe we won't need so many people. That's the fear. Or it could be the pleasure. If we get 40 new prospects in our pipeline, think about the opportunities that we're going to be able to work with clients, the new projects that we'll be able to work on, the new things that we'll be able to learn. We will certainly be able to meet our numbers and meet our bonuses. We'll be able to do other things as a firm and invest in other things, right? So pain or pleasure, but it's getting back to making that number 40 relevant.
Right,
And you
versus
have to do that.
versus just information sharing. Okay, this is 40. This is 40 and it's supposed to be at 40. It's like just information sharing. How come it's not at 40 versus using specific languaging depending on your audience, whether it's a pain or pleasure type where you're inspiring more action or motivating more action versus I could just be sharing or commanding information.
Right. The other thing too is that people have, that leaders have, and really, even if you're not a leader, that you have when you're talking to somebody, we have these conversations, right? And a lot of conversations are done virtually. So you're on a Zoom or a Teams call, and people are back to back on calls, right? And you go from one to another to another to another. People end up getting saturated. Right, they don't have the time. We a lot of time talk about soak time. Time for us just to think, to process, to understand. And so if you're just going from one to the other to the other to the other, by the end of the day, people are going to have forgotten what was that message in that 8 a.m. meeting. And so because you don't want to have the meeting after the meeting, prepare before the meeting to be relevant, to think about the audience. And we talk about informing. You're absolutely right, Melinda. Informing, what do I want you to know, right? But if you want to be persuasive, it's how do I want you to feel? And between the head and the heart, it's about 18 inches. So that takes a little bit of think time to make it relevant for people. That makes sense.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Right. It requires that we take the time because we may know what is in our heart or what we want. At the same time, it's not going to be the same thing as what they might want or thinking or feeling. So it's taking
Right.
time to really hone in a message that bridges that gap, that bridges
Yes.
both, right? And you're meeting them where they're at so they feel heard and understood. But it does require, and I thought I was pretty good at it, but I actually learned recently that I'm still learning. I'm still because I have these great tools and X activities in a workshop, and sometimes they're not ready. Like that sometimes in terms of I'm not ready to do this activity and allow for that. Like so when I share an activity and I feel it's great, this is the best thing. You're gonna feel so transformed. And I learned the other day, sometimes they're just not ready, and that's okay. And so I had to reframe and change my way of introducing it to say, if you're not ready, it's okay. Just your presence being here is enough. And if you want to take a deeper dive and share more, that's great too. So just kind of having that range of where people are at and thinking that through. And so I'm continuing to learn in this area or evolve too.
Yes. So what you just did there for your client, you affirmed them. And I think that affirmation is important, and that really gets to the whole discussion on empathy. And so some leaders view being empathetic as a weakness, and those are leaders that skew a bit older, right? I don't understand why we have to be so empathetic with all these snowflakes. Work is hard. Let's go. Let's get that mental
Let's
toughness.
get it going.
Yes. And empathy, I have found, and I haven't always been very empathetic, but I have found that empathy is really acknowledging that people may be in this place. And this is where they are. Now, it could be of their own making, okay? But the feeling of where they are, frustrated, missing a deadline, worried, concerned, being empathetic of how they feel allows them to have that acknowledgement and then move forward. And then move forward to be able to get things done, which I think is important. But you hit on one of my favorite concepts, and that is growth mindset. So you adopt and you have this growth mindset. I have this growth mindset. I get up every day and say to myself, what more can I learn? What am I going to learn today? And in our team meetings, we always talk about what's something that we've learned, what's something that we've either learned about ourselves or something that we've learned in working with our clients that's made us better. And sometimes they're difficult learnings, right? Where somebody may not have been ready, or in our trainings, we put people on camera. And we put people on camera because we want people to be able to see themselves as others see them. Because we think and we see ourselves a certain way, right? And oh, I come across this way and here's what I see. But it's really important to be able to for you to see yourself as others see you. And what we find in some of our training sessions, and this happens frequently with some of our energy and some of our nuclear clients, because we work with about two-thirds of the commercially owned and operated nuclear power plants in North America. Our nuclear engineers tend to be very resistant, and they don't want to do that. They don't want to get up, and it's that fear. And what I always tell them is, this is part of this growth mindset. Every day in the nuclear industry, we work and strive to get better, and this is part of striving and working to get better. And so you kind of try to cajole people. But just last week, I was working with a client, and when I walked in, there was a group of four. And the client had told me ahead of time, the guy on the right, he could be a tough customer. And it was as advertised. He was a tough customer, quite resistant, quite defensive. All these other sorts of things. And so what I ended up doing was I empathize. I said, I know it's uncomfortable. You already are a strong communicator. You're going through this. Humor me a little bit. We won't have you go first. Why don't you go third? And so we ended up sort of moving in slowly. And it's always so funny because at the end of the session, he was the one who hung back and talked to me about what he learned about himself. And I think that being aware, being empathetic, being audience centric versus, hey, I should be on slide six by now because I'm 10 minutes in, and we're still on slide two because people aren't necessarily moving along at the pace. We have to be able to do that because we only get one shot at this, if that makes sense.
Right. Oh my gosh. So many. I love that. I love that you were there, you met him, you moved him slowly through and helped him to learn more about himself. And
Yes. I will tell you, the old Eileen,
would have
The old Eileen and my four children. I have two daughters and two sons. They're grown now, but I had them in 5.5 years. So they were boom, 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 boom. My husband and I kind of started late, and then it was like, woo, all of a sudden we had four kids. And it's so wonderful, just so wonderful. And our youngest got married a couple weeks ago, and that was the very first family wedding, and it was just wonderful to see. But I think what the kids would have told you is I would be like, hey, let's go now, right? Let's go. I'm on three, I'm on two, I'm on one, let's go. And as they got older, I became more empathetic. I think they will tell you that I'm very empathetic now, but I think when they were younger and into, toddler, grade school, going into high school. I think when they were in high school, I was a bit more I was more empathetic. When they were in college, empathetic. And now forward. And what I have found is you can't go wrong with that empathy. You cannot go wrong with being audience centric and thinking about them. It goes back to that old adage that we've heard so many times. You have to seek to understand before being understood. And so I think as a leader, that's important for us. And then the challenge is, but our board or our investors are expecting a return on investment. And so we're going to have to motivate people to be able to pick up the rope and let's go and all go in the same direction. So that's the challenge. But we begin with this audience-centric mindset. We begin with that empathy. We begin thinking about them first, building common ground, connection, and laying out the business case. And also being very candid and direct. And so being candid and direct is important because you may be asked a question, and there are certain questions that you're simply not going to answer. But you have to tell your team, I appreciate the question. That's information I'm not going to share at this time because it is confidential, proprietary, competitive, whatever it is, it hasn't been approved yet. So being very clear that, you're on a need to know basis, and as of today, you don't need to know. But when I have the ability and authority to share, I will share. So I think that even in the Q&A, being upfront and candid is going to be important. And you don't have to apologize for that. If you've been empathetic upfront, audience-centric upfront, when it gets into Q&A, you can answer the question. And there's only three ways to answer any one question. I know that information, and here it is. Number two, I know the information, and I'm not going to share it because have the respect to explain why. Or number three, good question. I appreciate that you asked that. I don't have that information. I'll be happy to get it for you. What I can tell you is that helps create sort of that holistic, respectful, audience-centric communication model.
Wow. So good. So good. So many golden takeaways and nuggets for our audience. And Eileen, if there's people out there or companies out there that are looking for your help, they are going through some strategy, crisis management, and they need training, how would they get a hold of you?
Well, I appreciate you asking that. And yes, if organizations and companies are going through change, or they have a crisis situation, or need a communication planning, or we do a lot of media training, presentation training, stakeholder engagement training, those sorts of things, I would invite you to please visit our website. And it is think like you're going to think, and it's Wickstead. And so it's WIX. X marks the spot, TED. So it sounds like there's an S, but it's WIXTED. And you can always reach out to me directly. I love to talk to people. I love to learn about what's happening in different companies and industries and the challenges. And really, whether you're in healthcare or energy or manufacturing or finance or anything and everything in between, the real competitive edge is your ability to communicate effectively. And that's with purpose, with strength, and with clarity. And if you're not audience-centric, then you're not able to convey what the purpose of your communication is. You won't have strength of communication, and it won't be clear. So it's thinkwickstead.com. So hopefully I'll have an opportunity to visit with some of your listeners.
I will. They need it. Your information, your wisdom, your techniques are powerful. And I really, really appreciate that you shared them with us today. I've learned so much, and I really appreciate that you did that today.
Well, Melinda, thank you so much. And thank you for inviting me to be on your podcast and spending this time with you and your listeners. It's been an honor. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And thank you, listeners. I trust that you got your golden takeaway. It was a power pack today. And so go implement them right away. And remember, anytime you have a chance to communicate, you're also connecting and taking that information and making a positive difference in the world. Until next time, I'm your sister in flow. Take care. Bye-bye.
That's a wrap on today's Speak and Flow podcast. I hope that you've gained valuable insights to help you communicate with more clarity, connection, and confidence. Before you go, let me ask you this. Can your team communicate your founder story in a way that strengthens relationships and builds your company brand? If not, I've got a tool for you. Introducing, it's an AI founder story creator. This is a tool to help you craft a compelling story instantly that you can share with your team, and therefore your team can share with lots of people, building your brand. Grab this tool. In addition to creating immediately your founder story, you're also going to get one-on-one coaching with me so that we can continue to refine the story so that it's in alignment with your company messaging. Click on the link in the show notes, grab it today, and until next time, keep leading with confidence and courage.